D1, number 3A.
I've tried to show this afternoon that the story of the spiritual idea covers the whole range of the Bible and of science and health, that the Bible shows only part of the story, and that the textbook shows the further part. So we do not discard the Bible when we see that science and health is an addition, adding to the Bible the principle and the rule of being. It's just one story. But what we have to see is their right place, so that we are not in danger to put too much stress on something which is not adapted to the time in which we live. Those two books have their own message or their own office within the whole. You know how Mr. Dawley said when he reads Science and Health, then he knows God. But when he reads the Bible, then he feels God. And very often in his talks he would speak on this relationship or complementary office of the Bible and science and health. Science and health gives us the principle, the system, the tools, the exact tools, the exact words and terminology. The Bible gives us the music of it. It is as if science and health would give us the defined tones, and that the Bible is a great musical composition of these tones, warm, near to the heart, living, comforting, so that they complement each other. I remember a letter which John Dawley wrote to me at the time when he started the Bible talks here in London. He said he felt that our students have known now the terminology of the system, the words, the mathematics, as he called it. And he said, and now I want to go through the Bible so as to give the music of it, the composition of it. And so there are times where perhaps we devote ourselves more to the one book than to the other book. They change. During the war, we were mostly considering the textbook, investigating the textbook, getting the system right. Then after the war, most of our thought was concentrated again on the Bible. For the first time, we really began to read the composition of the Bible intelligently, scientifically. It was a tremendous step suddenly to see that the Bible is not history, but that it is an illustration of timeless, spaceless being and facts, that that which happens in the Bible is happening with us, that the characters of the Bible are us. Then perhaps we were again going back more and more again to the science and health. In the 50s I was trying to show the structure of the textbook again. And I remember so well in those years, many of you were there, that I went through the textbook rather minutely. Can you say minutely?
Yes, minutely.
Minutely. The first five chapters, and I just couldn't go on anymore. I just felt at that point, I can't give that sixth chapter of science, theology and medicine before I can't give the feel, the music of the Christ through the Bible. That's why I went back and then gave their summer school on the prophets. And only after that, and giving the feel and the tone and the music of the Christ, I felt, now I can start again with the textbook and give that sixth chapter which we have taken last winter. And that's why it has made such a great impress on our consciousness, because the music of the Bible has already been there about the Christ translation as the prophets show it. So we may go from one to the other and put the accent on one or the other. But both books give us the way, and that's the main thing. So that today I feel, as I have said, that there is something new waiting for us. And that new is... They're hardly to say so, it's the chart. It's a chart. Yes, a chart. Because this chart gives us to the Bible and to the textbook that method which to a great extent frees us from the Bible and the textbook. Not in the way that we discard them. No. Through a deeper understanding of the textbook, we get the better comprehension of this chart, and that is science in its concisest form. And science in its concisest forms gives also the most potent method of new revelation, of new discovery. So that, in a way, we have used science, or we have taken science up to now mostly as a method of interpreting the Bible and interpreting the system of the textbook. But science, as I have said before, is not only interpretation, but science is the working method for new revelation, for individual new revelation, so that each one has a future of infinite progression in front of him, where God, oh God, principle... Really, this only principle can do. That principle interprets itself to itself, not to us, to itself. You can say as us, but that's already dropping again. But principle interpreting itself to itself constantly new. And that's the newness which is so much needed, because one is in danger of getting always into a rut if one leans back on a single text. Now, in order to prove this point, the Bible gives us the key again. See, everything is adumbrated in the Bible and the textbook. It's already there, somehow adumbrated, somehow latently there. It has only to be seen properly. And so I want to just draw our attention back to the days of creation. Anyway, to the fifth and sixth and seventh day of creation. Because I presume that you have a fair knowledge of Mr. Dawley's and Mrs. Eddy's interpretation of the days of creation. And you remember that one day with the Lord is as 1,000 years. So that the Old Testament, covering 4,000 years, have given the picture of the development of the spiritual idea through four stages in 4,000-year periods corresponding to the first day of creation, second, third, and fourth day of creation. And then you remember how Mr. Dawlish showed us that at the moment we come to the fifth day of creation, or to the 5,000-year period with Jesus, that Jesus came to fulfill the Old Testament. He didn't come to destroy, but to fulfill. He fulfilled at once, so to say, in one day, all the 4,000 years of the Old Testament. He broke with the fifth day of creation, the fifth day of creation, which says, let there be moving creatures that have life. The moment you have life, you have no more time. Life has no time. Life is isness, being. The time concept falls. The mortal concept of history falls. And Jesus realized that everything that has gone on before him is now, and that he can prove right now the whole story of the Old Testament. So the fifth day of creation shows us first, theoretically or fundamentally, that the moment we touch the fifth stage of the developing or ascending stage, that time is no more. That at the fifth period, the days of creation become numerals of infinity, as Mr. Dawley called them, and as Mrs. Eddy calls them. They become present facts. There are no more stages of evolution within time history, but they begin to be seen as present nowness. And therefore, Jesus could say, now is the time, and now I can do it. He saw that he could fulfill that which has taken 4,000 years in one go. So he fulfilled the 4,000-year periods in one day, one spiritual day. In this way, introducing the 5,000-year period, and then the Bible ends. The Bible doesn't go on, but the days of creation have said there are seven periods. There are 7 days, and therefore 7,000-year periods. So, where are the others? Where are the 6,000 and the 7,000-year period? They come with the textbook. So you can see that the Bible, as John Dawley said, is only showing part of the revelation. And our thought must therefore ask ourselves, therefore, if we are true to the Bible and want to keep the Bible holy, and if we don't want to discard the Bible, we have to fulfill it. That is, we have to advance in consciousness to the 6,000-year period and to the 7,000-year period, which doesn't mean anything else but to fulfill the spiritual status depicted in the sixth day and in the seventh day of creation. The demand on us is to fulfill the need of the hour, that is, to fulfill the 6,000-year period. We come to the end of that period. And to feel our way and prepare the way for the 7,000 period, seventh day of creation. So if we are aware that infinite progression is only concrete being, and that if we want to have being, that we have to be willing to progress. What is this sixth day? If we can see the fundamental facts of the sixth day, then the 6,000-year period asks us to realize that fact. And if we can see the foundational idea of the seventh day, then it is up to us to realize in concrete being that seventh day. What is the challenge that the sixth and seventh day bring on us? The sixth day, you remember perhaps, I can't go too deeply into it, I must presuppose that these things are more or less familiar to us. The sixth day of creation, Mr. Dawley said, gives us the synonymous terms. Remember how he said that in the four first days of creation become in the fifth day numerals, the days become numerals, and in the sixth day the numerals become synonymous terms. And then in the seventh they become oneness. What did he mean when he said that the sixth day shows the synonymous terms? And I feel that if we grasp the deeper meaning of what he meant there, then we have found the key to the chart, to the present situation and what?
Subject,
yes. Thank you. Mr. Dawley said two things, really, about the sixth day, you remember. He said the sixth day gives us the synonymous terms. And it gives us the four, the diagonal, namely the Word in its own office, the Christ in its own office, Christianity in its own office, and science in its own office. Can you hear something? The sixth day is that which leads thought out of metaphysics, out of numerals, out of the contemplation of ideas, into science. Because synonymous terms mean the infinite. Every synonymous term means the infinite one. And therefore, if we touch the sixth day of creation, we touch the standpoint of the infinite. And the second point, he said, was that we get there the four. Word, Christ, Christianity and science, both in its own aspect, indicating the calculus, the operation of these seven terms as the Word, Christ, Christianity and science. Therefore, the seven and the four capitalized term, the main point of what is on the chart. The chart is nothing but capitalized terms. So, if we understand the spiritual meaning of the sixth day properly, we come nearer and nearer to the standpoint from which the chart is written and from which the chart can be understood and interpreted. Let me first take the seven. What do we get as a new vision in the sixth day compared with the preceding days? In the sixth day, it's the first day, as you know, which has seven subtones. So the whole subject is given in the seventh for the first time, in the wholeness. All right. What is that wholeness? For the first time, here it is said that God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness. We find for the first time something, namely that God expresses himself in the plural form. Elohim, say Elohim, yes. Elohim is in the Hebrew a plural form. Mrs. Eddy interprets it then as life, truth, and love. But what does this Elohim say? He says, let us, let life, truth, and love make man how? In our image, in our likeness. This is very new. Up to this point, God was also a creative being who said, let there be light, let there be a firmament, let the earth bring forth, let there be light in the firmament, let the water spring forth, moving creatures. There was always that creative sense. But now, what is very different is that God, so to say, makes himself as himself. He makes his own likeness, his own image. If you take that sentence and put it a bit differently without forcing anything into that sentence, you could read it this way. You could say, and God said, let us make our image and our likeness and call it man. And as we have seen before, the textbook then goes further and drops the term man, because it says that's only a naming of the whole thing. It isn't the cake. It isn't the thing itself. It's only the name of the cake. The thing itself is that God makes himself everywhere, always, under any circumstances, as his own likeness and as his own image. And for those people at that time, they had to say, and that would be a better term for man than what you had up to now, really. And it's quite a great improvement. But today we can go further and say, let's drop that. What therefore the sixth day wants to show us is something quite new from the first 5 days. Namely, it says that the divine principle of being, which is life, truth, and love, always makes himself, always in his own image and likeness. That would be a better sense of man. That would be a higher sense of man. Afterwards, she drops the term man. So, but let's just stay in the sixth, just to get a new feel of it. Therefore, when you read that text of the sixth day, try and read it once, not by concentrating too much always on the term man, man, and man, because the text is full of all other things than man. And the text shows over and over just one thing, that deity is reflected in his creation, that his creation is his image and likeness. Therefore, that really that Elohim creates himself as his image and likeness. Think of it. You know, these things which I tell this weekend, they are not things which can perhaps easily be taken in just during the talk. They are the things which will occupy our thoughts in the evening when it's dark and quiet, and when we can think about them for hours. Think about it. That principle here in the sixth day says, I create everything as my image and likeness. That's all that there is going on. That the divine infinite principle is operating and operating and operating as himself, his own image and likeness. No matter if you call that then creeping things and cattle and so on, or men and women and so on. And he says, and let that be male and female. Let that be a creative sense and a conceptive sense. That says to us, oh, during those long winter nights where everything is quiet in the evening, I just can sit down and contemplate the Infinite One, how he looks at himself. And I don't even say that's men. I don't even say that's the universe. I say the Infinite One knows himself as his infinite ideas, creative. And I accept that as the only thing that's going on. That's the conceptive, that's the female. And then we got it. And we got the sixth day. And we got the height of creation. The crown of creation. This text is so full of that sense that the infinite creates himself, knows himself as himself. It says, we shall see this likeness everywhere. Everywhere. We shall see this likeness and reflection everywhere. Everything is the image and likeness of God. Everything is the image and likeness of God created by God. Therefore, everything is God knowing himself, being conscious of himself as himself. That's the sixth day. That's what has been devalued and depreciated as men. God fashions all things, she says here, all things, she didn't say men and women here, after his own likeness. All things are likeness of life, truth and love, of Elohim. All things. All happenings, all circumstances, all situation, all action, all power, all substance is the likeness of life, truth and love, knowing it himself as life, truth and love. Terrific vision opens up. Quite terrific.